Rooms.
All right. Good evening, everybody. As they say in Yiddish, a guten Erev Yontif. It's the day before Yom Tov, and happy Thanksgiving for those who are celebrating. But I appreciate everybody taking the time and putting aside your aprons for an hour so that we can learn a little Torah. We try not to miss too many weeks. So we are up to Psalm number 124. It's only eight verses. I'm going to put it up here on the screen. Put it here on the screen. It's here somewhere. And hold on. Where are you? Here you are. And we, where are you? Zoom and share screen. Eventually, I'll figure this all out. I'm getting better at it. Hey, there
Here
we go. All right. Shir HaMaalos LeDavid, Song of Ascents of David. Lule Hashem Shehayah Lanu, Yomar No Yisrael. Were it not for God who was on our side, let Israel now declare. Hey, everybody, Jewish people, recognize that if it were not for God who was there for us, Lule Hashem Shehayah Lanu, were it not for God who was on our side when men assailed us, when men stood up against us, we would not have survived if God had not been there to help protect us. They would have swallowed us alive in their burning rage against us. We're going to come back to all of this. The waters would have carried us off. The torrent would have swept over us. Over us would have swept the seething waters. Oh, but blessed are you, Hashem. Blessed is the Lord who did not let us be ripped apart by their teeth. And we are like a bird escaped from the trap broke and we escaped. Our help is the name of the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. You read this psalm, and you are, have to get a feeling that the Jewish people, and again, as we've said many, many times, King David is speaking about it from a personal standpoint. I know God. I have faced mighty, mighty challenges against many, many nations, against many people who are out to harm me. And I know in my heart of hearts that I could not have done this. I would have been devoured alive, ripped apart by their teeth in their anger when they stood up against me, if not for you, God. We, as the Jewish people, we recognize this. Everybody knows the famous story and with Mark Twain and all the questions they say, give me proof that there is a God in this world. And the response was the Jews, because it makes no sense. It makes no sense that we are still around. The greatest of empires have come and are gone. The greatest of strongest nations, countries, as I said, empires. I must have shared this story with you. I was at a dinner once, one of the shuls, and they had a speaker, very, very good speaker, who's spent many, many years in Israel. And he told the story that when he was asked what his favorite city in all of Israel, they were shocked to hear that his favorite city in Israel is Caesarea. Caesarea, for those who may not know, Caesarea is an old city that has ruins from the time of the Byzantines and the time of the Romans and the time of the Greeks and the time of, you name, the Babylonian. There's ruins from all of the, it's not exactly the most Jewish town. There are Jews living there, obviously. So the speaker was talking and he said that people, when they heard that, they were like, really? That's your, not Jerusalem, not Haifa, not Tzfat. Like, oh, Caesarea? He said, yeah, because it's the most inspirational place in Israel, because I stand there and the only thing left of all of these mighty nations are the ruins I'm standing on. They're gone and I'm still here. We recognize there's no way we could survive. All of our history and all of the difficult challenges that we have faced as a people, if it were not for Hashem. but I want to be very, very meticulous in the reading of it. Let's start again. A Song of Ascents of David, fine. Were it not for the Lord, let's look at the Hebrew. Lule, if not for Hashem, right? You guys see it right here where the pointer is? Lule Hashem. This name right here of God, right here.
Yeah.
Famous Yudin Hey and Vavin Hey, right? That's Hashem's name. We have spoken numerous times about the name of Hashem. Some names are Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, and sometimes we use names like Elohim or Shaddai or all different names, and they each represent a different aspect of how we perceive Hashem. So the name Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, anybody, is the trait of? Which trait of God does this represent?
Kindness.
Yeah, mercy. Very good. Kindness, mercy. The name Elohim is that of strict justice, right? The way I always remember it is when we have Shema Yisrael, first we say Hashem, the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey, then we say Eloheinu, and then we say Hashem again, Echad. It's a funny way to talk. Listen, O Israel, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem, who is our God, Hashem is one. We've talked about this, of where we find the contrast of in our perception. Again, obviously, God is indivisible. There's no, God is one, not just one as opposed to two or three, but also means one. He's whole, complete. There's no two parts to him. There's no two parts. So whereas I perceive God sometimes as exhibiting the trait of kindness and mercy, Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey, sometimes I see God acting, manifesting himself as Elohim, as strict justice, right? I'm sure it crossed your mind as it did mine. October 7th was definitely an Elohim moment. On the general purpose of it, it was strict justice. There was a punishment meted out. Now, it's been already quite a few weeks, and we're hearing numerous, literally, maybe even tens of stories of miraculous things that went on even on October 7th. There was definitely kindness. There was definitely mercy even within it. The contrast. So the name Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey is Midat HaRachamim, is the attribute of mercy. Okay? David here says, were if not for, not just a word meaning God, if not for God, but it's also if not for the attribute of mercy that God expressed, we would never have survived. If you think about it, as a parent does with a child definitely is deserving of some kind of punishment, it's even under those circumstances, it's done with mercy. You don't want to go ahead and clobber the kid. You don't want to go ahead, even though the kid has you so upset and he did something that was so wrong, you're not going to punish the kid to the extent. You always try to temper it with mercy, with a sense of kindness. And here David says, it is that attribute of kindness that I recognize, and I declare that if not for that attribute, there's no way we could have survived. But it goes even further. And this was something new for me. Again, I highlighted Hashem's name here, but look at the screen for a second here. Lule, if not for, again, the Yud Hey Vav Hey, Shehaya, that was Lanu. Lanu means to us. I'm going to highlight it right here. Lanu, to us. Interesting term. That if not for this attribute of mercy that was for us, we would have never survived. But the word lanu in gematria, in numerical values, is lamed is 30, nun is 50, that's 80, and vav is 6, 86. The name for God, for strict justice, we just talked about it, is Elohim, right? In contrast to the yud and hey and vav and hey, The Elohim name is the God of the attribute of strict justice. That also is 86. So if not for Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, the attribute of mercy, Shahayalanu, that was originally for us as an attribute of strict justice, we would have never survived. Do you follow that?
Can you say that again? I'm sorry.
Yes. This word lanu that I have highlighted has the numerical value of 86. The same numerical value of Elohim, which is God's attribute, the name we use for the attribute of justice, of punishment, strict justice. But the word in between those two words is the word Shahaya, that was, meaning in past tense, when God was angry with us and was going to mete out a punishment, albeit he did do a punishment, and therefore you have the word lanu, which is the numerical value of Elohim, the strict justice. But if not for the attribute of mercy that overpowered what was the attribute of strict justice, we would have never survived. Is that, you got that, Robin?
Yep, I got it.
Okay. So I'll give you a perfect example. Perfect example of this. The Talmud tells us, we're not going to get to it, but there's an earlier psalm, Psalm number 79. 79. If you take a look at it, it talks about how the Gentiles came in and they basically destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. King David has the vision that there's going to be a time of where, I'll just read it very quickly in the beginning, 79. Reads, hold on. Mizmar La'asaf, a song of Asaf. Elokim, O God, Bo'u Goyim Benachlasecha, the nations have entered into your estate. They defiled the sanctuary of your holiness. They turned Jerusalem into heaps of rubble. They have placed the corpse of your servants as food for the birds of the sky, the flesh of your devout ones to the beasts of the earth. They shed their blood like water round about Jerusalem, and there was no barrier. We were a disgrace to our neighbors, the mockery and scorn of those around us. Until when, Hashem, will you be angry forever? Will your jealousy burn like fire? Rather, pour forth your wrath at the nations that know you not, and upon the kingdoms that do not call upon your name, for they have devoured Jacob and desolated his habitation. And it goes on and on and on. The Talmud asks a very simple question. The opening line says a song from Asaf. Asaf is a fellow. A song of Asaf? Asks the Talmud. This entire chapter, this entire Psalm number 79 is all about the destruction of the temple, the mutilation and the horrible tragedy that befell the Jewish people at the time. You sing a song about that? Fair question, the Talmud says. The Talmud gives a very profound answer, ladies and gentlemen. And that is, the Talmud says that while, yes, God was very upset and angry at the Jewish people, which is why the temple was ultimately destroyed and we were banished and we were exiled, God did not pour forth his anger against the people. He took it out against the stone and wood of the temple building. Mm-hmm. As the Talmud says, he took it out against, what was it? Against Eitzim V'Avanim, against wood and stone. That's where it's like a parent or somebody who's so furious and wants to punch the guy in the nose, but instead he takes the cup of coffee he has in his hand and he throws it against the wall and he shatters it. He gets that anger out. Yes, God was furious with us. But says Asaf, we can still sing a song. Why? Because he didn't take out his anger against us as a people. He took it out against the building. The Jewish people really deserved destruction at the time of the Beit HaMikdash. But God took out his anger against the wood and the stone. If not for the fact that his attribute of strict justice, of where when he was angry, it was turned into mercy, then as the verses here continue in verse 3, they would have swallowed us alive. we would have been destroyed. We, the people, would have been destroyed. But even in the midst of the anger, even in the midst of him meeting out a punishment, we, the people, were spared. We, the people, were here. The Beit HaMikdash is still gone. We are still here. And for that, says David, King David, we have to give song to this. If not for the Yud Kei Vav Kei, if not for this attribute of mercy that was originally the strict justice, we would never have survived. That's the deeper meaning that's going on here. But you'll note in verse 2, it repeats it. You'll see in verse 1, it says, were it not for the Lord who was on our side, it's repeated again in verse 2. Were it not for the Lord who was on our side. What's the repetition? Max, you see that? Verse 2 and 3, verse 1 and 2 both have the same line. There are different answers that are proposed. The simple one, which is what we'll go with tonight, is that the threat from the nations who try to destroy us often takes two possible forms. One is a physical threat, and the other is a spiritual threat. They're not always separate, but they express themselves differently. Certain era, like we're about to celebrate, God willing, in a couple of weeks, the story, the holiday of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is clearly, they did not intend to wipe us out physically. That was not the intention of the Greeks. The Greeks were after destroying us spiritually. Take away from us the Torah. Take the Judaism out of us and make us just, quote unquote, Jews, not Judaism. Hanukkah is all about the recognition that we waged and were able to defend ourselves, not just physically from an approaching army, but rather an army that wanted to destroy us spiritually. What other story goes like that? Believe it or not, the story of Purim. But most people see it a little differently. Most people will tell you, and they're not wrong, that the decree against the Jewish people at the time of Purim was of a physical annihilation. And that is true. Haman and Ahasuerus, they promulgated the decree that every single man, woman, and child is to be killed. That is true. But let's ask ourselves a simple question. What motivated them? Why? What is it about the Jewish people that all of a sudden they said they need to be destroyed? Did we do anything? Did we have a strong army that we were now rebelling within his own country? No. So what was it? If you open up Megillat Esther, you read the book of Esther, you will see as Haman's pleading with Ahasuerus to make this decree, he says, you know about the Jews? Mifuzaru mifarad beino amim. First of all, they're scattered amongst the entire countryside. They're throughout all of your 127 provinces. They're not just in one little group. They're all over. Okay. That's not a terrible thing in and of itself. Their practices and observances of their religion are different than everybody else. Ding, 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 ding. There you have it. So what? So they practice religion differently? What does that bother you? What's wrong with letting them serve they want? And you serve how you want. Isn't that the beauty of the United States? At least that what I thought it was. That's the beauty. There should be no reason why anybody should be upset that I observe the way I do. But you get a sense that's what's bugging them. They look at us and they say they consider themselves different. They consider themselves practicing with a spirituality that is foreign to us, that we can't tolerate. That's what Haman and Ahasuerus are after. In fact, the Talmud is bothered on this verse number 2, where it says, were it not for God who was on our side, They translate it as in plural when men assailed us. You can look at it even in the singular. In Hebrew, it's Bekum Aleinu Adam. Adam means a man. And the Talmud wants to know, who was that man who stood up against you, who tried to destroy you? And if not for God, we would have been destroyed. Says the Talmud, Haman. It's actually referring to him. Excuse me. What was he was motivated by was a hatred of the religion. And therefore he says, we can't tolerate them. And therefore not, let's find them another place. Let's see if we can convince them to practice differently. Haman said, we can do nothing with them but to annihilate them, to destroy them, just for the mere fact that they have a different religion. What did they want? In verse 3, if not for God, they would have swallowed us alive. I've read this psalm many, many times. And I understood it as it's an expression. They would have swallowed us alive. We would stand no chance. But after watching the savagery of October 7th, I think it takes on a much deeper meaning. They literally tried to swallow us alive, throwing live children into ovens. They tried to destroy us while we were still alive. In their burning rage against us. What would have happened? The waters would have carried us off, and the torrent, that tremendous of inundation of water, would have swept over us, those seething waters. On the simple meaning, I think, on the simple level, it's exactly what it's describing. That it is, you've all been to the water, to the beach, right? And it's very nice when it's a calm, cool, and you get a wave or a little ripple, right? But then you go a little further out and you're doing fine. And then comes along a big wave. And you feel the anxiety and you feel that you're being inundated. You feel you're going down. I remember going snorkeling. I went snorkeling with my wife and kids a couple of years ago and it was fine. Nothing terrible. It was relatively calm, but we got a little more comfortable. And we went out a little further, right? And it's great. And we figured out how we can hold our breath and go underwater and see better and then come up and blow the water out, right? And it works fine, no issue. But it's the moment you cough or the moment you drink a little bit of that water, it that feeling of absolutely being carried away and you don't know what to do. That feeling of helplessness, of being overtaken. That's the feeling David HaMelech is trying to convey here. In their burning rage against us, it wasn't just they came along and they gave us a patch. It was like being swept away by a massive wave. And you don't know if you can breathe anymore. We would have been taken over. But there's a silver lining. And I think that's really the message or the overriding theme in this entire psalm, that if not for our connection to God, we would have been overcome. But the flip side, the converse, is because we do have faith in God, because we do have a relationship with God, knowing God is with us, I'm not going to let that overtake me. And I'll share with you what I found in the commentaries. I love this idea. To appreciate it, we have to go to the book of Psalms for a moment. Let me see if I can do this very quickly. Not the book of Psalms. I meant to say the book of Song of Songs. Sorry. It didn't come out right. We're in Psalms, right? I'm looking for chapter 8, verse 7. Here, look at these words. Did it come up for you guys, the new?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Vast floods cannot quench love, nor rivers drown it. If a man offered all his wealth for love, he would be laughed to scorn. In Hebrew, it's mayim rabim, an inundation of water, a flood of water. Lo yuchlu would not be able lechabot et ha'ahava, to ever extinguish the love. Unaharot, and those rivers, lo yishtefuha, will not drown it. What? This is Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim. For those who know, Shir HaShirim is the poetic expression of the love, the analogy, the parable of a love between a man and a woman, between a husband and a wife. And it's meant to be as an allegory of the loving relationship that God and the Jewish people have. And in this verse, it describes the level of love, the level of commitment that no matter what comes our way, it could be a flood of water, the many waters of the other nations, then their hostility will still never extinguish the fire of this love that the Jewish people have for God. Nor can the rivers of tears and torture wash away that love. This is how the commentaries understand what King David is referring to on a deeper level, on the verse we're discussing. Again, going back to that verse in Psalms. The waters would have carried us off. What waters? The waters of these nations that are trying to sweep us away, both physically and spiritually. It would have overtaken us. Blessed is the Lord who did not let us be ripped apart by their teeth, which we'll talk about in a moment here. No amount of pressure, no amount of force, no amount of terror will ever destroy the love, the loving relationship that the Jewish people have with God. What came to mind as I was preparing this early on, after unfortunately the hostages were taken, I don't know, many of you may have even seen this. The very first hostage, the only one so far that we have found, that the Israeli army actually found, was a soldier, a woman, a female soldier who we were able to find. And her whole story, they had footage of her mother, that she was doing hafrashat challah, the mitzvah of taking off a piece of dough. You guys know about this? Do you remember this? It was an astounding thing. Let me share it very quickly. There's a mitzvah in the Torah that when you make bread, when you make dough, depending on the size, you have to take off a piece. In the old days, we used to give it to a kohen, but nowadays we burn it. But there's a piece that's taken off, and it's a mitzvah called hafrashat challah, a separating of challah. And again, love to say the fact that we borrow the term, oh, don't forget to go to the bakery and pick up challah for Shabbos. That's not really correct. Challah is the piece we separate away from the dough that we then burn. That's really the term challah. We use it colloquially. We say, yeah, just pick up challah because we take challah from it. But challah is not really the loaf of bread we eat. File that away in your trivial pursuit, okay? They showed footage, great. This woman got up and there's, I don't know, 50, 100 people all joining her in this mitzvah. Massive loaves of dough. Amazing. And she's making the bracha. And there's a beautiful prayer that's said at the end of it that many women say when they do this mitzvah. In the middle, towards the end of it, actually, she's talking about this, how she's performing this mitzvah, and it should be as a merit to finding her daughter, who's unfortunately was at that time in Gaza, and et cetera, et cetera. And in the middle of it, she almost does a freelance and adds three words. In the middle of it, she says, Hashem, ani ohev otcha. In English, God, I love you. Think to myself, here's a woman who does not know the fate of her own child, who is worried sick, probably hasn't eaten, hasn't slept, and she's doing everything she can, and she's beseeching God to help her. Please, I love my daughter. I want to see her. And the words that come out of her mouth are, Hashem, ani ohev. I love you. That's what I'm talking about. No matter the pressure, no matter the force, no matter the terror, the Jewish people will always have the love for God and God the love for the Jewish people. I was blown away by that story when I saw it. To be able to have that level of faith, that level of connection to say, I know this is hard. It's brutally hard. And I don't know what the outcome will be. But nevertheless, ani ohev otcha. I love you. God, I love you. But let's keep going. I want to point out something else. In verse 3, it's the first time you have it. The first word is azai, then. Right? If not for the fact that God was on our side when man stood up against us or men stand up against us, azai, then they would have swallowed us alive. Verse 4, azai hamayim shitafunu. Then the waters would have carried us off. Verse 5, azai avar al nafshenu. Then the waters would have swept over us. Three times, three successive verses begin with the same Hebrew word, azai. Azai, then it would be. It's like the second half of a sentence. If not for this, then, right? Fred, that's for you. That's your if-then Boolean algebra, right? For computers, right? If, then. Every statement had to be like that, right? That's what this is. If not for God standing by us, then they would have swallowed us alive. The waters would have been overwhelming. The waters would have swept us away. Then. But three times? It's not a coincidence, right, Rabbi Kosman? No coincidences. King David writes this purposely. Azai, the three letters. Aleph is one. Zion is seven for a total of eight. The last letter, Yud, is 18. Ooh, everybody's shaking their head now. Ah, 18, famous number in Judaism. It's called Chai. Ah, God on our side, then no matter what the situation is, it could be the torrential waters. It could be the terrible things about swallowing us up. Azai, don't worry. Chai. God is with us. There will always be life. But it gets better. Why three times? What's 18 times 3? 54. Okay. You say, wait, wow, 54? Well, tell me something you know in our daily service that has the number 18. You all know it. It's not one of my trick questions. Pretty straightforward. I'll give you a hint. Three times a day.
The Amidah?
Oh, the Amidah, right. In fact, the Amidah is also known as?
Shmona Esrei.
Right. Shmona Esrei means what, Susan?
18.
It means 18. Shmona is 8. Esrei is 10. So Shmona Esrei is 18. Why is the Amidah called Shmona Esrei? Because originally there were 18 blessings in it. Now we have 19 because one was added later. But it still retained the name of Shmona Esrei. We still call it that. I jokingly, when I teach about the Shmona Esrei, I say, yeah, the 18/19. I must say like a thousand times every time I teach it. It's 18. So what is being said here? King David is teaching us. You want to know when we face these tragedies, when we face this pressure, you know what will be there to guarantee God is on our side? 3 times 18. 3 times a day we daven to him. Prayer. The protection from the raging waters, our tefillah, is prayer. You ready for this? If this hasn't surprised you enough, I already told you that the Talmud said, when King David says, when the man stood up against us, who was that referring to?
Haman,
right? I told you 18 times, 3 times a day is a total of?
54.
Would it come to you as a shock if I told you that the name Haman is mentioned exactly 54 times in the Megillah? Would it come to you as a shock? It shouldn't. There's a method to this madness, folks. Yeah, The 54 brachos of the Amidah that we say every day is that which corresponds against the Hamans of the world, who are mentioned 54 times in the Megillah. But I'm not done, because I want to focus on one more aspect here. In verse 5, Baruch Hashem, that's the phrase, not mine. Here's where it comes from. See it? Right here. Baruch Hashem, blessed is the Lord, who did not let us be torn apart by their teeth. Again, the simple understanding is that God protected us from becoming prey for their teeth, to be devoured with cruelty like a savage animal. He protected us from that. And that is the simple meaning of it. But again, there has to be something deeper. And I call your attention to what you all know from the story of Pesach. We sit around the Seder. We sit around the Passover Seder. And we talk about the four sons, the four children. And lo and behold, child number two, the Rasha, the evil, the wicked one, who says, what's all this service to you? Who needs all this? What is the Haggadah's response? What is it we do? Hake es shina. We blunt his
teeth.
We blunt his teeth. Cool expression, but what does it mean? Are you to physically knock out his teeth? I don't think so. I don't think that is appropriate. I can't imagine that the Haggadah would be telling us, unless he had a side business, you know, as an orthodontist or as a, you know, oral surgeon, there's no way that that would have been the advice. So what is it? Okay, again, on the simple level, which we start with and then we dig deeper, on the simple level, what the Haggadah is telling us is take away the sharpness of their derogatory language. The Rush is sitting there and saying, who needs all this? So respond to him. It's not the way we speak. You can say, as my teacher, I had many years where the teacher would teach something in class, whether it was in Chumash or Gemara, whatever it was. And of course, somebody in class says, that doesn't make any sense. And the Rebbe would comment and say to you, you should say, I don't understand. This doesn't seem to make sense to me. Don't make a categorical statement that's derogatory and say, this doesn't make sense. Like all of a sudden, you know better than all the sages put together. It's just, it's a certain chutzpah. So he taught us that that's not how you. So this Russia who speaks, who needs this? You blunt his teeth, you take away the sharpness of that kind of derogatory language. But there's something much deeper, much, much, much deeper. Let me start with a quick introduction. Everything in our universe that is created by God, right? Everything has an origin. And that's how God created it. Which means, let's just put it in perspective, even something that comes out that is misused and is handled as evil or wicked or bad still has to have within it some kind of connection to truth or God, because otherwise it can't exist. Let me explain. If you go ahead, I don't care if you have it's battery operated, if you unplug it from the wall, from the electrical outlet, it will die. The battery will last only so long. Nothing can continue to exist unless it's still plugged in to, in some way, as minor as it may be, but in some way to God, because God is the source of all life. Think about it, even just as human beings. It could be that the person, the body has already broken down, all of the faculties have already deteriorated, and there's really nothing physically going on, but the soul is still there. They are, quote unquote, still alive until the soul leaves, then the person is considered dead. So for anything to exist, even for evil to exist, it has to have at least some spark, some element of connection to sanctity, to holiness, to godliness, for it to exist. The letter in Hebrew that represents truth and sanctity is the letter Shin. Gesundheit.
Thank you.
Is the letter Shin. Okay? I'll give you an example. Even this wicked child that we're referring to, how do you say the wicked child in Hebrew? He's the Ben Russia, Ben Harusha, right? The word Russia, not R-U-S-S-I-A, although good connection between the two, right? Russia in Hebrew means wicked. But look at the letters, Resh, Shin, Ayin. That's how you spell Russia. Please note, the first letter is Resh, last letter is Ayin. Marty, what's Resh and Ayin together?
Why? Ra.
Ra. Ra means?
Bad, evil.
Evil. And what's in the middle?
Hey.
No.
Shin.
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 Resh, Shin, Ayin. That's how you spell Russia. He is essentially Ra, Resh, Ayin. He only exists because he still has a shin as part of his name, as part of his word. How about the word for lying or falsehood is called sheker? Shin, kuf, resh. Again, the Arizal, the great Kabbalist, tells us the little bit of truth has to be there for a lie to continue. If you tell a lie that is so preposterous and has no element of truth, it can't exist. It can't continue. That's always the big wonder in the commentaries. They ask, how could this blood libel, one of the oldest forms of how could it? There's not even a drop of truth to it. And they all scratch their head to figure out, how can it be a lie so preposterous? For another time, we'll talk about it. Okay? But everything that is evil, false, lying, anything in the negative term, you will often find the letter Shin because it has to have some element of truth and sanctity for it to exist. There's a verse in Psalm somewhere else where it talks about God says that the day will come, Shine Rishaim Shibarta. You, God, break the teeth of the wicked. Uses the term break. Breaks the teeth. What does that mean? It breaks the shins of the wicked. Meaning to say, if I take the shin out of these words, what is left? Nothing but pure evil. 100% unadulterated evil. 100% evil can't exist in our world. And therefore, God breaking the teeth is a play on words. Breaking the shinayim of the wicked, taking the shin out of their name, they're left with only Ra, they will cease to exist. The Talmud tells a story. I'll give you an example before I tell you the story. You all know we just had it a few weeks ago in the Torah reading of where, what's the name of the city that was so evil in the eyes of God, he had to destroy it?
Sodom.
Sodom and Amorah. The Torah actually says that the Anshe Sodom, the citizens of Sodom, Ra'im v'chata'im. They were evil and so sinful, ad ma'od, so much. Ra'im is the plural of Ra. Ra means evil. Ra'im is evil in the plural. They had to be destroyed. They can't exist because the shin is no longer there. There's no element of sanctity. There's no connection. It's just Ra'im. Your evil, destruction. It can't continue to exist. Even the two names, the two items, and I know I'm going Kabbalistic on you, but you'll like it. What's the name of the evil angel? The real, the one that's, you know, everybody calls the worst of the worst. What's his name?
Satan.
In Hebrew, Satan. It's spelled Sin Tet Nun. Satan has the sin or shin. It's the same letter. And what is the name of the creature in the story? This is for you, Susan. In the Garden of Eden, who represented evil that was convincing Adam and Eve to partake of the tree? It's called a
serpent.
Snake. Yes, in Hebrew. Nachash. The Nachash. Nun Chet Shin. It has to have a shin. But watch what happens, ladies and gentlemen. If you take out the letters shin and nun, which spell the word shane, tooth, in the name Satan, the first letter is the sin shin, last letter is nun. All you're left with, Michelle, remember this, is the letter tet. Okay, Sharon, in the word nachash for the serpent, the nun is the first letter, the shin is the last letter. Take those out. Take the shane, take the tooth out. You're left with the letter chet. Sharon's got a chet. Michelle has a tet. The word chet and tet together means chet is? Anybody? Sin. We say chatanu. We have sin. Al chet. Chatanu. Al chet. That's the word. If you take away shin, nun, which is shin, tooth, right? All you have is pure evil. They are the embodiment of pure evil in the world. If you take away the letters of sanctity, you take away the shin, then you have pure evil. The Talmud goes so far as to say, why does a snake, when it gives its poison, where does the venom come out from? Picture it in your mind.
The teeth.
Right by the teeth. That's correct. The only thing that's holding it back is the sense of sanctity. Otherwise, it's pure venom. Shin is shinayim. The teeth are that which represents the sanctity. So when it comes to the truly wicked, and ultimately, we daven that Hashem, the day will come, that God will go ahead and slaughter. Remember Chad Gadya? We sing at the end of the Haggadah. And Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God comes, and he's going to shech the Malach HaMaves. He's going to slaughter the angel of death, who, by the way, is the same Satan, same guy, right? What does it mean he's going to shech them? Was he an animal? He's going to slit his throat? No, what he's going to do, he's going to remove that level of sanctity. In plain, simple term, he's going to unplug the Satan from connection to God. The shame is gone, and he's only left with evil. And therefore, he will cease to exist. That's what it means that God will slaughter, because all he's going to do is remove his sanctity. And by definition, by default, all that's left is pure evil, and pure evil cannot exist. Now, yeah. If you contrast that with what we tell the wicked child, we do not tell the child, we do not break his teeth, we don't remove his teeth, but just the opposite. What we do is we blunt, we loosen his tooth. As a reminder, he has shame, he has sanctity. He still has his teeth. Remember, Shin Nun, the letter Shin, is representative of inherent sanctity. What we do is the opposite of what we would do with the wicked. The wicked, God is going to take out their teeth and they'll be left with nothing but evil. This child, we do the opposite. We, so to say, wiggle his tooth and say, hey, you have inherent sanctity. There's a beautiful soul within you. Let's explore it. You have questions about Judaism? Fine, let's go find some answers. But we remind him of his inherent sanctity that's within him. But warn him that if he continues to remove himself from the Jewish people and he denies that inner sanctity, he will lose that tooth. He will lose the shin and unfortunately become unworthy of redemption. That's what we tell him. We try to give him a positive message that you still have that sanctity within you. Don't blow the opportunity. I find it so beautiful. when I went to the rally last week, if nothing else, was it last week or 2 weeks ago already?
Last week.
Yeah. I haven't seen you since then. Right.
Yeah.
One of the nicest things was standing there with people who probably 2 months ago were not so openly proud of their Judaism, were not so on board with expressing their Judaism. I was standing next to people that were so thrilled to be connecting once again with their Judaism. It was amazing to see. There is a swelling right now. Almost ironically, the more that they tell us they don't like us, they hate us for who we are, the more we appreciate who we are. And there are Jews coming out of the woodwork for this. That's what I'm talking about. To this child who sits at the Haggadah, who sits at the Seder, and he expresses his heartfelt feeling of, why do we do all of this? We remind him there's an inner sanctity. There's a Jewish pride. Let's explore it. I consider it my responsibility over the next few weeks to reach out to people who I've reached out to years ago and they blew me off. Now's my chance. Now's my chance, because maybe the more Hamas in the world, and I shouldn't just blame Hamas, at this point, it's around the world. They're hating us, and the haters are coming out. The more the Jewish pride is swelling, and we need to capitalize on that. That's what's being said here. They came along and they want to rip us piece by piece, limb by limb with their teeth. Their teeth. You know what? That's a reminder to us of our inner sanctity. The teeth, the letter shin, that's within us. That's still there. So finally, it finishes. And it says, we are like a bird escaped from the trap. The trap broke and we escaped. Have you ever seen an animal, unfortunately, that got caught in a trap and it actually escapes? Does it escape unharmed? No. Usually not. But look at the next verse. The next verse says, the trap broke and we escaped. We didn't even get injured. We didn't just escape from the trap once we were in it. The trap broke and we didn't even get injured. That's the amazing part. Miraculously escaped and didn't even get injured. How can that be? There's only one answer to that. And that's how he finishes. Our help is in the name of Hashem, the maker of heaven and earth. When you're dealing with the primary source of everything, the one who created heaven and earth, yeah, miracles do happen. Does it defy logic? Absolutely. Does it make sense? No, it doesn't. But that's what happens when you're the inventor of it all. Nothing is beyond God. That is what David finishes here. This whole chapter is, we face the terror, and I'm worried about it. But I know that the only way I survive it is because Lule Hashem Shahayalanu. It's because God stands by us. He gets angry at times because we are not doing what we're supposed to. And punishment does come. But it's always with Hashem, Yudke Vavke, with an element of mercy, with an element of kindness. That's how it has to be. This is what the only reason why we survive as long as we have against all our way is because God, who is the maker of heaven and earth, stands by us. There's no other explanation. There's nobody ever in history who could ever explain why anti-Semitism is what it is. It also makes no sense. And how that we survived all these thousands of years. It makes no sense. The only rational or irrational explanation is God, because nothing else really makes sense. And David wants us to make that declaration. A song of ascents, were it not for Hashem who is on our side, let Israel now declare it. Make it a focal point to say it out loud. Baruch Hashem. Thank you, Hashem, for keeping us alive, protecting us to the best of our abilities, and doing what has to be done. But it's all because of you. That is the message, I believe, of chapter 124. Questions?
I have one.
Please.
We have, throughout, it has the word us, but it uses nafshenu, which is really our souls. Is that significant? It seems like it should be. It's more than just our physical presence.
You're 100% right. I think it ties into what we said earlier. There are many enemies that come after us in the physical sense, trying to physically annihilate us. But ultimately, even their motivation is because of our soul, is because of the way we connect spiritually to God. This is, and I didn't have a chance to share it with all of you. I love the fact, I don't believe in coincidences, but Tuesday last week was the rally. Okay, it was on Tuesday, which was Rosh Chodesh. It was the first of the new month of Kislev. The day before, on Monday, is something known as Erev Rosh Chodesh, the eve or the day before Rosh Chodesh, which in many Judaic sources tell us is another powerful day of prayer, where prayer is supercharged. In fact, in many congregations, they have a special service for Mincha every Erev Rosh Chodesh. It's called, listen to the term, it's called Yom Kippur Katan, the little Yom Kippur. It's 12 times a year. Erev Rosh Chodesh. Okay. It's not a coincidence in my book, the fact that Monday, before the rally, Monday was Erev Rosh Chodesh. And there was a big push from many congregations across the country to make a special effort to harness the power of Yom Kippur Katan. I went. I've never done it before. On that Monday, I went. And it's about a 45-minute, hour-long service. It included slichos. It included a lot of the things that we do on Yom Kippur. It ends with Shema Yisrael and Hashemu Elokim, the same way we end Ne'ilah. We did that. It was a supercharged, powerful prayer day right next to Tuesday, the rally, where I believe it's these two parts. Monday, we put our spiritual war on. We put our faith and said to God, we know that if we're going to be successful, we need to pray to you and we need to go connect with you on a spiritual level, because that war that we fight is on two levels. A spiritual one, and then Tuesday, we did everything in our power in the physical sense. We voted with our feet. 300,000 people came out. Okay, 290, right? 300,000 people were there. And we spoke, and we stood together. To me, that's not a coincidence, that they were literally day next to the next day. That's the two levels, Marty, that I'm talking about.
Rabbi, just
where it's always going to be against us. But you have to know the us is not just the physical. It's the us of nafshenu, of our souls, who we are spiritually. I come back to why we do this class. Why did we switch to Psalms? Because we are helping to fight the war. We are the soldiers that are helping the physical soldiers with our spiritual boosts. We're all working harder of making blessings, having concentration on what we're doing. All of this is helping create a spiritual tidal wave that will, God willing, be a continuation of the physical tidal wave to get rid of this threat. They have to work hand in hand. So I think you're correct in picking up on that point. Robin.
No, I was just going to say, going along with that, for that Monday or in general, that Yom Kippur Katan, is there fasting? Because I think I heard that
yes.
There was fasting.
Yes, many, many people, I did it, I fasted that day. Yeah.
But is that traditional for all the Yom Kippur Katan?
So the some do it, most do not, because it takes a lot out of a person, and it could be a random Monday, a random Wednesday, and it puts a real crimp in people's functionality, but they'll do the service even though they didn't fast. Okay. But I'm sure there are many, many, many that do fast on a regular basis on that Yom Kippur Katan.
Right. And then I was going to say, going along with what Marty said, the translation in English, and he picked up obviously the Hebrew word, but I looked at from Kabbad, it has soul in all the, like every paragraph that it,
yeah.
Like it says, the waters would have washed over us, illness would have passed over our soul. Paragraph 4, then paragraph 7, our soul escaped like a bird from the hunter's snare.
Right. So that is the literal translation.
Right.
The loose translation, because it's referring to us. It is referring to us. So, but again, every time you see the word nafshenu, it means both. It means us, but it means on a deeper level, the fact that they're after our souls. Yes, Sharon.
Well, if anyone doesn't have any question, I just wanted to share with you, when you were talking about the rally, our older students, our 7th and 8th graders, both boys and girls, went to the rally. And so they sent us a video, and the boys and the girls, they were, you know, all carrying signs and stuff, and they were all singing. They were all lined up singing. And they were singing certain songs. I mean, they were familiar to me that we have sung at Shoresh. And some of our songs, they had like a hand movement, or they stomped their feet. In the line of the boys and girls, you could tell every child that went to Shoresh. they were doing it. They were, you know, they would do it, and you could see, that's a Shoresh kid. That's a Shoresh kid, because they were following our, what we do. So I just thought that was funny, because it was just, but
we talked about, when we were talking about going to the rally, we made the hard decision that Shoresh can't bring everyone together to the rally, because we literally come from so many different cities and didn't have, and even meeting up there different time, it was just, but in going around, either to the rally, at the rally, from the rally, I ran into, I mean, I have to say at least 50 different families of Shoresh connections. I mean, that's, there was a great showing, really, really great showing. And I daven that swell of connection that we felt for each other, religious, not religious, anywhere on the spectrum, Nobody cared. We all stood together as one, kippah, no kippah, covered hair, not covered hair, jeans, shorts, tichel, you name it. Everything was there. And we stood as one people. And I'll finish with this. I believe that this has not happened to the extent that it did. The last time we had such a group together, standing as one with one singular focus, was Mount Sinai. That's the last time we stood together like this. We have not had 300,000 Jews representing the full spectrum. It's at least since Sinai.
Doing what?
To me, that was so, it was exhilarating to think about that. That we had the opportunity to stand like we did 3,300 years ago when God gave us the Torah, and we were forged together as his people. That moment, in a large way, was recreated last week.
Back in 2448.
That's correct. It was, for me, that moment was such a, like a, wow. We're on the threshold of something big. We are. There's no question in my mind. How this will play out, I don't know. I'm not a prophet. Way above my pay grade. No idea. But I do think this is not just a little blip in the course of our history. This is a pivotal moment. And that's why I think it's so important that we capitalize in every way that we can. Okay. I've spoken my piece. Any other questions? If not,
sidebar question, Rabbi.
Yes, please.
How do I come up with the previous classes? Because I wasn't able to come to be online.
If you go to Shoresh.com,
okay,
on the top menu bar, let me just make sure I do it right. Hold on. You go to, at the top, it will say, hold on, it will say programs. Okay, if you go down, you'll see it says media, the second from the bottom.
Okay.
Once you get there, scroll down about, I don't know, a third, two thirds of the way down. There'll be one section of this will be with the Israeli flag, which we started these classes since the tragedy. So that's where you'll find the ones that we've been doing, 120, 121, 122, 123. And then tonight I'll put up 124. But then once you're there, you'll see there's literally hundreds of other things to learn and to cover, especially if you scroll all the way to the bottom. You'll see stuff on the, you see Make Your High Holidays Even Higher, and there's classes on Hanukkah, on Sukkot, all these things that we've done. So Shonish.com under Programs Media.
Programs Media. Okay. Yep.
That's the place to find all these classes.
And Programs is on the top menu across.
Correct. The third one.
Gotcha.
Yes, Robin.
I just wanted to say, it's a comment, just because it's interesting that you raised this. So I have never really done anything with the Kavod and Frederick, but I was called to do something last Thursday, which was they were doing, based on what you were talking about, challah baking in order as a mitzvah for Israel. And they were doing it particularly based on that video that you had talked about. And there was about, I had never been there before, but I somehow in my head, I started looking, I was thinking, and somehow just randomly that day came upon it and was called to go there and help perform that with them. And it was really lovely because I actually showed that video and, you know, we did the prayers and was calling.
I was blown away by that woman.
But I mean, that they put that together, you know, as for us to, you know, come together and do that mitzvah to help, you know, to help maybe the other hostages and you know, raise money.
So we're having one here in Baltimore again.
Oh, great. Well, tell me
we're doing another one with some of the teams.
That sounds good.
Yeah. It's a very powerful mitzvah. It really is.
Yeah. It's my first time too, ever making it from scratch. So that's why and at that particular time.
Excellent. Excellent. Fabulous.
All right.
Have a great week, everybody. And I'll see you next week.